There was a blizzard in Omaha tonight, which was the site of AEW Dynamite. Thankfully, it looked like most, if not everybody, who was supposed to be there in the crowd was there because the building looked pretty filled out. All was well because all of the scheduled matches on the show tonight were able to go off. And Dynamite last week was the first episode coming out of Revolution, and it wasn't much of a show. And Revolution being an excellent show until we had that horrendous finish. It was marred by that atrocious closing segment, closing main event. Everything about the end of that pay-per-view just sucked the life out of everybody in the building, sucked the life out of me. And so tonight we had part two. This was the rematch between Jon Moxley and Adam Copeland for the AEW World Championship, where they were going to go out there tonight and try to make people forget it was like a bad dream. What happened at Revolution? We're gonna go out there and show people what we can really do. And we're going to make it a street fight. So this time we can have all the weapons and plunder and toys that we need. All the smoke and mirrors that we need here to put on this World Championship match. This is what I will say about the title match tonight, which did not close the show, by the way. And it was a wise decision considering how this match ended. It was marginally better. It was marginally better than what we got at Revolution because they had the benefit of being able to use all sorts of weapons. And like I said, smoke and mirrors, because it was a street fight. So they were able to start outside and they worked their way into the building and through the crowd and all over ringside and tables and chairs. And then we got the run-in brigade, where I feel like half the roster ran in during this match. We had Spike, the board with the nails in it, which got embedded in Jon Moxley's back. One of the sickest things that you'll ever see were the nails. They were in his flesh, and as they tried to pry the board off of his back, you could literally see the flesh being ripped. The flesh almost came off because they couldn't get this thing out of this man's back. His back is bleeding. First time I've seen Moxley bleed in a while. So that's how you know it was a Jon Moxley match. I didn't think as much of this match as maybe you might have or some other people may have because it was better than Revolution. Yes, it was better than Revolution. They also, by the way, had the benefit of this not having to follow three or four match of the year contenders, which absolutely hurt the match at the pay-per-view. But that doesn't mean that that was the only reason the match was bad. It just was not a good main event. This was marginally better. Here's the thing. Here's the key takeaway from this. Jon Moxley is still the AEW World Champion. That's not a surprise. I don't think anybody honestly expected that Moxley was going to lose the title tonight before we got to Dynasty, and he did not. And you know what? That's fine. That's fine. Because now Adam Copeland can move on, and we can focus squarely on Dynasty because the match is now official. It will be Swerve Strickland, we now know, challenging Jon Moxley for the AEW World Championship. That now is the destination, the hope, right? Cope is done. Now the hope is that we can get a title change on that show, which I'm still not convinced we're going to. But hands clasped together, I think I'm hoping, just like a lot of other people are hoping. That's the focus now. This was just like, let's just get this over with. Let's get this out of the way. Let's let, you know, Copeland gets his rematch, and then we're done with it. And my fear coming into this show is that they might do the finish in such a way that sets up a three-way for Dynasty to keep Copeland in the title picture for a few more weeks. And I'm grateful that didn't happen. It's going to be one-on-one at the pay-per-view, exactly the way that it needs to be. But that's the best compliment that I can pay this match tonight. It was marginally better. Otherwise, I didn't think much of it. Actually, what carried this show, honestly, was everything else. I enjoyed this show. This was a better show than the one that we got last week. No thanks to the title match. But it was everything else that kind of came around the title match that I enjoyed. We had two women's matches on this show tonight. We don't usually get two women's matches on a Wednesday night. You might get that on Collision, but you don't get two women's matches typically on Dynamite. We had two women's matches tonight, both of them very good. In fact, one of the women's matches closed the show tonight. Oddly, it was not the title match. There was a championship match and a non-title match. They opted to close the show with the non-title match. But both of them ended up being very good. And as far as the TBS title is concerned, I was wondering last week, all this Billy Stark stuff, is it possibly leading to Athena being brought up to the AEW roster and appearing on AEW television? And is her sentence on Honor Club going to finally come to an end? Or at least is she going to be let out? They've had her in solitary confinement for a while. At least let her, you know, an hour a day in the yard just to get some sunshine, right? AEW is the yard. And now we know, clearly, Athena is on the way. Because there was a segment that came later in the show, and Athena's name was never mentioned. She never appeared. But based on what Mercedes Moné said in the post-match promo, it is very clear that Athena is on her way. And we are heading towards Mercedes and Athena for the TBS Championship. I don't know if they're going to do it at Dynasty. I don't know if they're going to do it. Dynasty's too soon. I don't know if they're going to do it at Double or Nothing, or if they're going to save it for Texas. For me, that's a Texas match. That's an all-in match in Texas, and I'm very, very happy that finally, at long last, we're going to get a proper program for this woman on television, on an actual AEW show. That has me excited. It's long overdue, but I'm glad that we're heading in that direction. We also had an Eliminator Tournament final tonight, four-way match, to crown a number one contender for Kenny Omega's International Championship at Dynasty, and what we ended up with was not just one challenger, we ended up with two challengers. So, I mean, I thought Ricochet was getting the win. I was technically not wrong, but they kind of had a cop-out finish, and now what would have been a singles match is going to be a three-way match. So we're going to talk about all this. Again, it was a better show than last week. Last week, of course, I mean, that set the bar pretty low. But three quality matches on this show tonight, I can't hate on that. None of those three, by the way, involved Jon Moxley or Adam Copeland. This is your AEW Dynamite Review. It is March 19th, 2025. I am the Solo Monster. Thank you guys so much for joining me on yet another Wednesday night. Like and subscribe. Before we go any further, I must say thank you to everybody who helped get us to 85,000 subscribers. We did it. We did it the other day. We hit 85,000 subscribers here on the channel. So I thank you for that. Now we wait to 90K, man. That's the next big milestone. We're inching up closer, but I can't do it without you. So please go ahead and hit that subscribe button. If you are new here, hit that like button as well. Super chats are open. You will see them popping up on your screen as they come in. And we will read all your messages a little later on. And actually, KD, I'm going to read your message as well later, but I want to thank KD because he dropped a $50 bomb before I went live tonight. So KD, I appreciate that very much. And Dark Effect, man, look at this. Dark Effect is disrespecting KD. I don't like that. You suck. Can't have that. Dark Effect, thank you. We do have a goal going on in the chat, so maybe we'll get a double shot of Be the Booker. But again, we'll see. We got time to get there. We'll see if we hit that goal or not. Now, they opened the show tonight with the International Four-Way match. This was an eliminator. The winner of this match would go on to Dynasty to challenge Kenny Omega for the International title. It was Orange Cassidy, Speedball, Mike Bailey. This was his second appearance. He debuted on the show last week. Ricochet and Mark Davis. And the real standouts here in this match were Speedball, as he was last week. His style, it's just he's a much better fit in AEW than he would be in WWE. Like, this really is the place for him to be. So he stood out. But Mark Davis, which is what I was not expecting, Mark Davis was the other standout here in this. He was kind of the monster of the match, and he played that part well. So Bailey was lighting up Ricochet with kicks until Cassidy came in with his little kicks and his hands in the pockets. Bailey tried a series of kicks. He had his hands behind his back, and he was doling out kicks. Cassidy, though, countered all of them and got pulled outside by Ricochet, tossed into the barricade. Bailey threw a baseball slide Hurricane Rana. Davis was waiting for just the right moment. He cut off a dive. He powerbombed Bailey on the edge of the ring, and then he caught Cassidy, who was diving out, planted him with a back suplex. In the ring, Davis no-sold Bailey's chops. He demolished him with a shot of his own. Cassidy suffered the same fate. Ricochet goes over to the announce desk. Don Callis was on commentary because, obviously, you know, he came out with Mark Davis. And so Callis is on commentary, and Ricochet goes over, and he grabs the headset, and he says he's not stupid, unlike Tony Schiavone, who would charge right into the ring. It's about picking your spots. So the match broke down. All three opted to go after Mark Davis. Ricochet wanted to take a breather. It backfired on him. He got fed to Davis, who ended up running down everybody, and that took us into a commercial break. Davis controlled almost the entire break. Ricochet went for vertigo. He missed. That allowed Cassidy to go for a head scissors, but Ricochet countered the spinning DDT attempt into a Northern Lights. So while going through for the roll-through, Cassidy countered into a stun dog, and he was holding his right arm, and the announcers were wondering if maybe he tore his bicep. I'm going to assume that was just part of the match, and hopefully he did not tear his bicep. But we got a roundhouse kick and a Falcon Arrow from Mike Bailey to Orange Cassidy. He goes up top, Bailey does, and he goes for a shooting star press, only for a two count, though, because Davis reaches in. He pulls Bailey out of the ring, but he gets met by Ricochet, who dives out onto him. Now Ricochet is going up to the top rope. He hits a 450 of his own, or a shooting star. It was a shooting star press. Cassidy kicks out. So now Bailey and Ricochet, they're alone in the ring. And they're throwing some wild kicks at each other until both guys get mowed down by Mark Davis. Then he busts out a one-arm powerbomb on Mark Bailey. I'm fusing the two of them together. Put Mark Davis's head on Mike Bailey's body. He gives him a one-arm powerbomb to Mike Bailey, a pop-up powerbomb to Ricochet, and a pendulum pile driver. He spikes Orange Cassidy with it. Now, this looked cool. So basically, you got to picture it. He grabbed Cassidy's legs, and he jerked him up, and he caught him in position for like a Styles Clash. But instead, he gives him a pile driver. He grabs Bailey grabs for the pin, but Bailey barely breaks up the pin attempt. That was a cool spot, though. So for the finish, Bailey takes Davis down with a backslide in the corner. This is how the finish played out. Okay, he takes down Mark Davis with a backslide, and at the same time that he is doing this, Ricochet, unbeknownst to the referee, Ricochet joins in the pin on Davis, and he's folding his legs forward, but he takes his own legs, and he puts his legs on the ropes. Now, Bryce Remsburg is in such a position where he can't see any of this, and he counts the three. And he realizes that both men were effectively pinning Mark Davis at the same time. Bailey is celebrating. Ricochet is celebrating as if they won. Remsburg looks confused. And he goes over and he says something to Justin Roberts. And Justin Roberts announces that both Mike Bailey and Ricochet have won this match and are therefore number one contenders for the International Championship. Boy, April is shaping up to be the month of the triple threat, isn't it? Isn't it? Sure seems that way. Look, this was a really fun match. We'll get to the finish in a second. The match itself, very fun match. The standouts were Mike Bailey and Mark Davis. Davis, of course, was going to lose. It's one of the only reasons he was even in the match in the first place was so that they had somebody they could reliably beat. Tony Khan does not like beating Orange Cassidy. They didn't want to beat Mike Bailey yet because he just debuted, and they didn't want to beat Ricochet, who's probably losing at the pay-per-view. So the odd man out, Mark Davis. So at least they gave him a chance to shine. This, honestly, since he came back from his injury, this is the best that he has looked. But there was never any doubt that he was going to be the one taking the pinfall here in this match. The way they did the double pin, it was very silly. And it would have made more sense if they would have said, look, if the announcement after the fact would have come and said, look, we still have a few weeks to go until we get to Dynasty. Next week, we're going to announce another match for next week on the show. And it's going to be Speedball Mike Bailey against Ricochet, which is a nice attraction. And the winner of that match will go on to challenge Kenny Omega for the championship at Dynasty. They didn't do that because they don't want to do Mike Bailey against Ricochet. Not yet. Because they don't want to beat Mike Bailey yet. Right? So, of course, they did. That would have been the most sensible thing to do, but they couldn't do it. Because they want him in that match. Now, the match itself is going to be great. You put Kenny Omega, Mike Bailey, and Ricochet in the ring together, you're going to get a great match. I'm not worried about the quality of the match they're going to have. But this way, they get both men into a big match on the pay-per-view. Ricochet was always going to be on that show. But this is a way to get Mike Bailey in a big spot on that show. And my guess is Ricochet takes the pin there. They protect Speedball, so he doesn't have to be pinned. Kenny Omega is going to retain the championship either way. This is all kind of a pointless, fruitless exercise anyway. But now we have a triple threat. Tony Khan has made it official. Silly finish, yes. Great match. I enjoyed it. Now, after this, speaking of championships, we had the TBS championship on the line with Mercedes Moné defending against Billy Starks. Now, I got to call Mercedes' match on Saturday with Indy Hartwell. It's a first time ever match. You know, Indy grew up. I mean, she grew up as a wrestling fan. She grew up watching Sasha and Bayley, and it was their Brooklyn match at TakeOver that got her to join the business. I mean, she literally signed up for wrestling school the very next day. So they had a match on Saturday at the House of Glory show. Best match of Indy Hartwell's career that I've ever seen. She really did. She brought the best out of Indy in that match. And nobody has been doubting the quality of the matches that Mercedes has had as TBS champion. Because honestly, outside of that one match that she had with Britt Baker, which just so happened to be in front of one of the biggest crowds in the history of the company, which, you know, nearly stunk out the joint, every other match that she has had is very good. But up to this point, for the most part, it's just been mostly a collection of matches, right? There's not a whole lot of meat on the bone. There's really not a whole lot of substance there. And when Billy Starks popped up on TV a few weeks ago, my first thought was Athena, because I see Billy Starks and I think Athena, because they've been connected for so long. You know, she's her pupil, and they've wrestled each other, and they've been on the same side, and they've been against each other. And I said, maybe this is a way to get to Mercedes and Athena, but I'll believe it when I see it. So that's the only reason that I got excited about that. So then they announced the match for TV. I don't know that they made it clear. They may have made it clear last week that it was going to be a title match. I saw earlier today that it was going to be contested for the TBS championship. I expected no title change here. They really were playing up Mercedes' undefeated record coming into this match. She came into this match 16-0, really making it a point to mention that on commentary. She was not losing this match here, but they were putting it over. And Billy offers a handshake at the very beginning of this. Mercedes decks her into the ropes and starts paintbrushing her. So she was not taking this woman seriously at all. So after a commercial break, Billy wanted a tombstone. Mercedes fell backwards, effectively reversed it. Looked like she was going to go for her own tombstone. But instead, she gave her like a tombstone lung blower combo for a two count. So Excalibur on commentary, he puts over, has anybody ever told me that I'd be the perfect 80s commercial actor? Actually, one person has, yes. Actually, when I was much younger, I would have fit in perfectly in one of those cereal commercials. Like when, like the little kid with the blonde hair eating my Cheerios or something. I have been told that. But see, hey, it's never too late, though. It's 2025 now, but it's never too late. I'm just saying. Excalibur on commentary. He puts over Billy Starks having a 4.0 GPA in high school at the same time that she was wrestling. So she was wrestling and going to school at the same time. She's only 20 years old now. So he's putting over her GPA. Taz points out that his GPA was 3.9. And Tony Schiavone calls him GPA Jones over here, which got a great cackle out of everybody on commentary and cracked all of them up. So Moné wanted the three amigos. Billy countered the last amigo into a neck breaker across the knee. Crowd was loudly and solidly behind Billy Starks here, which was good because she hasn't been back on TV for very long. I mean, look, I know she's wrestled previously in AEW. Not for a while, though. I mean, she's pretty much been exclusively a Ring of Honor performer for a while. Outside of a short video package that they aired before this match, it's just been a bunch of little segments with her over the last few weeks, with her and Mercedes. Or Revolution. Her sitting up in one of the skyboxes taking notes, like Miss Tessmacher. You know, she's taking notes. That's really all we've gotten from her. They could have done a better job of establishing or reestablishing her on TV. They went into this title match pretty quick. But the crowd was behind her. You know, she's got that kind of spunky underdog vibe to her. And she's very good, especially for somebody as young as she is. So crowd was solidly behind her. And she hit a rolling elbow, high stack German suplex for a near fall. Mercedes caught her charging into the corner with a face buster into the turnbuckle. Starks avoided the Moné maker, hit a pump knee and a spin kick. Mercedes answered with a discus lariat. Both women were down. So both women trade near falls until Billy gets a shotgun drop kick. And then she tries for her Segoy driver, which is a very scary move. And it would be a scary move, honestly, if anybody hit it. She's 20 years old. She's not the biggest woman. She's a girl. Okay. And not a big one. And to see her hitting a Segoy driver is very scary. It looked like she almost broke this woman's fucking neck. Like, I know it's her move and all that, and I'm not a fan. So it maybe it just looked that way. Because basically what it is, you get Mercedes up on her shoulders, and she kind of grabs her and then just drives her down, and Mercedes has to tuck her head on the way down so she doesn't get spiked into the mat. And from the angle that they shot it at, it looked as if maybe part of her face caught the mat before she, you know, tucked her head. Now, maybe it was just the camera angle, but it looked very scary, and she could have broken her neck like an inch away from breaking her neck. Thankfully, she didn't. And she barely got her foot on the bottom rope for the rope break. So Billy went for a somersault senton off the top onto the apron. Mercedes moved. Billy crashed and burned on the edge of the ring. And Mercedes simply reached over, pulled her into the ring, locked on the statement maker. And she struggled maybe for about 5 or 6 seconds. And then ultimately, Billy tapped out. This turned into a hell of a match. And as I said, Billy had the crowd behind her. She was a great underdog here. She had a great showing in a match that nobody expected her to win. Let's be honest. Nobody expected her to win here. The real development, though, was later in the show. Renee is in the back. She introduces Mercedes. And Mercedes is answering a question from Renee, who says that she refers to Billy as that kid, and she is. She's still a kid. Like Javon Evans on NXT, 20 years old. He's still a kid. So Renee says, how about that kid? Gave you a hell of a fight tonight. And Mercedes agreed, but she said, it takes more than heart to beat me. And then she asked, who trained her? Who mentored her? Whoever that is, they know nothing about professional wrestling. Had she trained her, she may have had a chance of beating her for the TBS title tonight. And then she laughed that off and said that it was on to 17-0. And then she walked off. So it's happening. It's happening. They gave us the confirmation without giving us the confirmation that Athena is on her way. And it's about damn time. I would build to that in Texas. Maybe they want to run it once and then run a rematch in Texas. I don't even give a shit. As long as we get it, it's really all that matters. And Athena, to me, she's the one. If they're going to do that match, then Athena should be the one to take the TBS championship from Mercedes. And let that be the way that you introduce her on a full-time basis to the AEW roster. Now, whether or not you want to keep the Ring of Honor Women's World title on her, I personally don't give a shit. She's had that title for 800-900 days. It's her forever run, her infinity run. Maybe they want her to, forfeit the title if she gets, quote-unquote, called up to the AEW roster or lose it to somebody. I personally don't care. But this is a woman who has been effectively hidden away from the larger audience for far too long. And she's very good. And she will give that division another, just a great talent and a great shot in the arm. And they have a lot of talent in the division as it is. But you add Athena to the mix, and then Athena can work with Mercedes, and Athena can work with Statlander, and Athena can work with Megan Bain, and she could work with Toni Storm and Mariah May, all these people that she could work with. That's what I want to see. So we got our first real hint that she is, in fact, on her way in. We just don't know when. But now at least we have a direction for her. I'm just going to say, you know, Roderick made a comment in the chat that he thinks that Mercedes might win the Ring of Honor women's title first before Athena beats her. I agree. That's what I said. I mean, if they want to do, you know, the first match, maybe a double or nothing. And I could see Mercedes actually being the one to beat her and end her reign, because she's the belt collector right now. She's got 4 belts. She'll add a 5th one with the ROH belt. Maybe it ends up being winner take all. I don't know, but yes, I agree with you. I could definitely see them wanting to do that first match in May and then come back with it in July. at the stadium in Arlington and then give Athena the big win there. And you know what? If that's what they want to do, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with it being a two-match series instead of just one. I'm just glad that we are heading in the right direction. That's what I care about. Now, we had a pre-tape promo with MJF saying that people are placing their bets on who will be the next AEW world champion. Some are placing their chips on Darby Allin. Says, I beat him twice with a headlock takeover and he's probably dead on a mountain somewhere. He hasn't started his climb yet. Apparently Darby's climb takes place sometime next month. I don't know exactly when it is, but it's sometime in the month of April when he's going to do his Mount Everest climb, his very risky attempt. So, I mean, it hits a little too close to home because for all we know, Darby may very well end up that way on that mountain, but let us hope not. So he says, you know, could be Darby Allin. He mentions Will Ospreay. I beat him for the international championship. Swerve Strickland. Then he looks at his shirt. He says, look at me. I beat him in life. And then there's the cowboy. And as much as the hypocrite fans, it may pain them to admit it, there's only one horse to bet on to win it all, and you're looking at him. Says, speaking of looking, because he was holding it, as he was speaking in his hand, he had the business card that MVP gave him last week for the Hurt Syndicate. So speaking of looking, I've been doing a whole lot of looking at this business card, and it's got me thinking about my Triple B. Being around the waist of Dictator John, who has surrounded himself by a pack of wild animals, and it's clear to me that if I want a shot at that title, maybe I need a little click of my own. But the last time I trusted someone, I got burned pretty bad. But he told MVP here that he would have an answer for him on the show next week. Last week, when I saw that face-to-face with them in the ring, I did wonder if it is a way to build to a Young Bucks return. I don't care to see it like in this form. I don't really, I mean, I'm not wishing it, but it was my first thought that MVP is going to have MJF, Bobby Lashley, and Shelton Benjamin not join together. He's not joining the Hurt Syndicate. But if they kind of come to an understanding and they make Hangman their target, and Hangman's outnumbered 3-1, he needs some help. Who would make the most sense to help him and back him up in that situation? Would be the Young Bucks. Or whoever would be next, I suppose, to challenge for the tag team titles. Who else would that be? FTR apparently has their own story going. We'll talk about FTR a little bit later. The Outrunners they already beat. It would be the Bucks. It could be a way to reintroduce them to TV. But he'll have his answer for MVP next week, so we'll see where this ends up going. And then it was to the ring. Justin Roberts was standing in the middle of the ring to announce that it was time for the street fight for the AEW World Championship. It was the top of the hour. It was 9 p.m. So they were not headlining with this tonight. They cut outside the building. It's cold outside. Literally, they had a blizzard in Omaha. And there's Jon Moxley, and he's walking through the loading dock area. There's a big truck there. He's walking through the loading dock area. He has his briefcase. He looks like he looks like a businessman. He's going to work. Presumably the title is in there that we haven't seen since October. What he doesn't see is behind him, here comes Adam Copeland. And Copeland attacks him from behind. And I think they rang the bell in the arena. So at this point, technically the match was underway. Copeland tossed Moxley inside the back of one of their 18-wheelers that was parked out there. And it had a whole bunch of like goodies and gimmicks and items just laying around inside, one of which was Jeff Jarrett's guitar. Have you noticed that we haven't seen Jeff Jarrett? Jeff Jarrett has disappeared off the face of the earth. And we haven't seen him. And I'm okay with that because we never did get that Jeff Jarrett MJF match. Jeff Jarrett said, I'm going to win the AEW World Championship. And then he vanished because nobody wanted to see him challenge for the AEW championship. Maybe Tony Khan heard people and said, hey, you know what? Let's pivot away from this. They're going to come back to it at some point. If this really is his final year in the ring, we're going to see him back at some point. But I'm glad they moved away from that for now. But his guitar is there. So he grabbed the guitar and he hit Moxley in the leg with it. I think he did bust it up, but hit Moxley in the leg with the guitar. Then he kicked him out of the truck, and Moxley fell backwards and hit the back of his head on the garage door. So they brawled into the building and then into the crowd and then down to ringside. Copeland grabbed the trash can from under the ring, and he hit Moxley with it. They ended up on top of the solid oak announce desk. Don't forget, their announce desk is made of solid oak. I'm starting to think the WWE ones are too, because they don't break as easily as they used to anymore. I mentioned that the other night. Like, there were three bumps on top of the announce desk. Never broke. But in AEW, these things, they're like Japanese tables, right? They just don't break. So they're standing on top of the announce desk. Copeland was setting up for something. Moxley raked the eyes and then bit him on the head. And then gave him a paradigm shift on top of the desk, which of course did not break. Although that took us into the break. They came back from the break. Moxley was in the ring and he was using an open chair. And he had Copeland under the chair. And I guess with the bottom bar, he's like, you know, kind of forcing the chair down. And he is choking Copeland with it. So then he takes the chair and he places it around Copeland's neck. This man with his surgically repaired and fused neck wraps the chair around it and he begins to climb up to the top rope. He's going to end it. Copeland, though, pops up and he throws the chair at Moxley's head. And then he climbs up. Moxley is dazed. He's sitting on like top of the post. Copeland follows him up, delivers a superplex. So now both men are up. We got the yay, boo, strike exchange. We get a trio of clotheslines by Copeland and then a flapjack. Copeland now rolls out of the ring. And he goes under the ring and he pulls out his good personal friend, Spike. Which is the boar, or, I mean, let's be honest, it's Janice, okay? If you watch TNA back in the day, it's not Spike. It's Janice. It's the board with the nails in it. And he brings it into the ring with him. As he gets inside, though, Moxley drops him with a cutter. And so Spike went flying. Now Moxley goes outside, and he pulls out a table. And I'll tell you, this was the smallest table pop that I have ever heard. Like, usually you pull a table out from under the ring, it gets one of the biggest reactions of the entire night. This got a very tepid reaction. So not a big pop for the table, but he sets the table up in the ring against the turnbuckles in the corner. When he turns around, though, Copeland catches him with a spike shot to the gut. And then he hits him in the back with it. Then he lays Spike down on the mat and Copeland suplexes him on top of the board right onto the nails. And Moxley gets up, he sits up, and they get a close-up shot of his back, and the board is stuck. It is embedded in his flesh. The blood is pouring out of the holes that are now in his chest, in his back. And the crowd, of course, this is sick. You know, people are reacting to it because they're grossed out. They're disgusted by this. Some fans are cheering and they're laughing because they're bloodthirsty SOBs. But it gets this big reaction. He stands up. He's standing up now. The board is still stuck in his back. In comes Wheeler fucking Yuta, who wipes out Copeland with a Busaiku knee. Because you can't have a John Moxley title match without having Wheeler fucking Yuta out here. He goes over to try to assist Moxley, and he's trying to pull the board out of Moxley's back, and he can't do it. Or at least he's selling it like he can't do it. But like they're pulling on the board, and you can see the skin. It's like if you're using real barbed wire in a match, right? And you're wearing clothing, and you get the barbed wire stuck in it, and you try to pull the barbed wire off, but like it's sticking to the clothing and it's kind of pulling on it and yanking on it. But imagine if that was skin, okay? That's what this was. And they got a shot of it. It was fucking disgusting. Like if they would have really continued to try to really pull this thing out, like they would have ripped the skin right off this man's back. Absolutely disgusting. So Yuta leaves the ring only to get scooped up by Copeland outside in a powerbomb position. And he gets powerbombed through a table that had been set up on the floor. I don't remember. Maybe they set that up during the break. I don't remember. But now here comes Claudio Castagnoli out of the crowd to attack. Here comes Pac. They put Copeland in the ring. They lay a beat down on him. They got Copeland down face first on a chair in the ring, and they were getting ready for a concerto when FTR comes running out. Cash Wheeler wipes out Claudio on the floor with a dive through the ropes. Looked like he nearly smashed his own face on the edge of the desk. In the ring, Dax Harwood gave Pac a DDT and a pile driver to Jon Moxley. He clotheslines Pac out of the ring. Both men go tumbling out. So now the only men left in the ring, other than the referee, are Jon Moxley and Adam Copeland. He lines up Moxley for a spear through the table in the corner, which does break, but it was a very weak-looking spear. Copeland drags him to the center of the ring. He covers him. Here comes Marina Shafir. Okay, so we've already had Yuta. We've had Claudio. We've had Pac. Now we have Marina Shafir. We had FTR run out. Marina Shafir breaks up the pin. Now here comes Willow Nightingale. She runs down to the ring, and she wipes out Shafir with a clothesline. Then she wipes her out with a cannonball off the apron to the floor. Here comes Kip Sabian. We weren't done yet with all the run-ins. Here comes Kip Sabian. He runs into the ring. Copeland spears him. Here comes Nick Wayne. Sure, why not? Nick Wayne comes into the ring, who apparently, I guess, is back on good terms with Christian Cage, because the last time we saw him on this show, remember him and Christian, there was some tension there. They got up in each other's face. Because he said, you know, you fucked up last time when you tried to cash in at Revolution and you didn't win. He comes running into the ring, and he springs off the middle rope, and he drops Copeland with Wayne's World. He drops him with his Wayne's World cutter. Moxley then slow crawls over to Copeland. He shoots the half, covers him. Copeland kicks out at two. But then he cinches in the bulldog choke, and it didn't take very long. Referee's checking on Copeland. Copeland begins to fade very fast, and the referee calls for the bell. It was the exact finish here that they did a grand slam. This is exactly the same way that he put Copeland down with the bulldog choke. And it was a ref stoppage. And that's exactly how this match ended. And that means that Jon Moxley once again retains the AEW World Championship. Now, when the match was over, Wheeler and Willow, they're tending to Cope, who's, you know, sitting on the mat. He looks up and he reaches up for Dax's hand. And Dax Harwood, not only does he not help him up or shake the man's hand, he leaves. He walks away, like, disgusted. So Cash Wheeler goes over to find out, you know, what's going on here. And Harwood shoves his partner away, and he walks to the back. Wheeler helps Cope up, hugs him. So this wasn't like a heel turn where they're both, you know, this was a Dax Harwood thing. He was all up in his feelings tonight. So then Cash Wheeler goes to the back to go find out what the hell's going on with his partner. Willow, she gives the ring to Cope. She leaves. And the fans gave him a respectful ovation as Excalibur questioned if this was Cope's last bite at the apple. Oh, I hope so. It better be. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Imagine this. You're flying out to Vegas for WrestleMania next month. Your luggage is packed to the brim. You don't have a lock on it. I don't know why you wouldn't have a lock on it if you have valuables in there, but you don't have a lock on it. And you've got your special underwear with the little bunny rabbits on them. You've got that ointment packed in there to treat that rash that you picked up on your last trip to Vegas. I don't want to ask how you got it. You've even packed your Winged Eagle replica belt. You're going to bring your belt to WrestleMania. Then you land. You get your suitcase back and you realize that somebody went rifling through it. Your belt is gone. They left the ointment, though. Why leave your stuff exposed like that to any creep who wants to take a peek inside? That's exactly what going online is like without ExpressVPN. You need a VPN because all of your traffic flows through your internet service provider's servers, including your mobile provider, and they know every single website that you visit, every single one. And in the U.S., ISPs are legally allowed to sell that information to advertisers. ExpressVPN reroutes 100% of your traffic through secure, encrypted servers so your ISP cannot see your browsing history. ExpressVPN is the best VPN because it's super secure and easy to use. Even the most technologically challenged person can do it. Just fire up the app, you click one button to get protected, and that's it. It also works on all devices, including phones, laptops, and tablets. And for customers in the U.S., ExpressVPN comes with Identity Defender, a new suite of tools to get your data removed from data brokers. And it can alert you when your data is compromised on the dark web and even insure you against data theft for up to $1 million. I'm going to be flying out to Chicago a couple of times in the next few months, and I'll be doing what I just did on my last trip, which is making sure that I have ExpressVPN enabled on my phone at all times to give me that peace of mind knowing that I'm protected. And that's important to me. I take steps on my home setup to make sure I'm secure. But, you know, it's easy to forget to do the same thing when you're on the go. If anything, it's even more important because now you're on public networks and you never know who may be snooping around on there. Protect your online privacy today by visiting expressvpn.com/solomonster. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster to find out how you can get up to 4 months extra free. expressvpn.com/solomonster. At least they had enough sense not to close the show with this. And under any other circumstance, I would say, man, this is fucking weird. You should be closing the show. You have a rare world championship defense on TV. You got to close the show with it. Rematch from the pay-per-view. It's a street fight. Why is this going on at the top of the hour? This is why. You can't end this show tonight like this because it's revolution all over again. That was a terrible way to end an otherwise excellent pay-per-view. And there was nothing creative or clever about this finish. This was basically Revolution, but with weapons. So they were able to be a little more creative with the way they punished each other, but the finish was effectively the same. And it was just like, okay, your usual John Moxley Death Riders win. Everybody runs in, lots of bullshit, and then Moxley finds a way to win. You can't close the show like that. It had to go on earlier. It had to go on like it did in the middle of the show here. So thankfully, they had enough sense not to close the show with this. The best compliment I can pay it, marginally better than what they did at Revolution. They had the benefit this time of not having to follow Will Ospreay and Kyle Fletcher, of having to follow Tony Storm and Mariah May, of having to follow Kenny Omega and Konosuke Takeshita, of having to follow Swerve Strickland and Ricochet, of having to follow MJF and Hangman Page. There were a lot of great matches on that show. And then to get what we got, you could see that's a big part of why I think people were like, man, what a wet fart to end that pay-per-view with. Now, there were some good matches on this show too, but nothing on that level. So they benefited from not having to follow that and having, you know, some of the extras that they didn't have access to because the first time it wasn't a street fight. So it was, I mean, kind of lazy because, all right, well, we're just going to do the usual street fight we see all the fucking time, every single week. We have some variation of this on Dynamite, on Collision, on Raw. All of this shit is played out. It's all played out in every company. Chairs, tables, ladders, blood, boards with nails in them, barbed wire. So they had access to that. The fans were into it, right? The fans were certainly more into this than they were the first match that they had. So they had that going for them. I mean, the nails in the back, I mean, that was just sick. I know it got a rise out of the crowd. I don't really care for shit like that. It was, I mean, it's Moxley. I'm not shocked that he would do something like that. He probably gets off on it. But then it was run-ins galore. It was one right after the other. It was Yuta, and it was Claudio, and it was Pac, and it was Marina, and it was FTR. Kip fucking Sabian is running out there. Nick Wayne is running out there. You know what this felt like? This was the Royal Rumble when The Undertaker wrestled Yokozuna in the casket match, and they sent half the roster out there to just beat down The Undertaker and make sure that he just could not win the title. Everybody ran out there. Bam Bam Bigelow ran out there. Crush ran. Oh, who was it? Tenryu was there, I think. Kabuki, the great Kabuki was out. I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, half the roster was out there. That's kind of what this reminded me of. And as far as Copeland, this is probably as clean of a job as you are going to see him do. Again, it was the same finish they did at Grand Slam. He doesn't get pinned, but he goes out. He doesn't surrender. He doesn't give up. He doesn't tap out. He fights and he fights and he fights until he can't fight no more. And he fades and he goes out. Closest thing to a clean job we're going to get out of him. even though it took Claudio, it took Pac, it took all these people for him to lose this match, but he did lose. And the most important thing here, we can move beyond this now. Copeland now has lost twice to Jon Moxley. And I don't care how it happened. I don't care who ran in and caused it. He lost. Does he get another bite at the apple, as Excalibur said? No. The apple belongs to somebody else. It's somebody else's turn now to get a bite at the apple. That's Swerve Strickland on April 6th. Let's focus on what happened at the end of this match, though. The Dax Harwood thing. This came out of nowhere, okay? Harwood is angry at him, but not Cash Wheeler, only Dax Harwood. Why? Why is he all up in his feelings? We don't know. And I don't believe there's been any hints of any sort of discord between FTR and Copeland or Harwood and Copeland. They haven't given us any sort of hint at that. It might just be a case where he feels like, look, we came out here to try to help you, and yet again, you have failed. You have let us down. Although, again, if you're really a friend of his, you would recognize that half the roster ran out to cause this man to lose. I wouldn't exactly hold that over his head. But we're going to have to now wait for the explanation of why. And they may give that to us on Collision. They may wait until next week. The television show, right? I'm willing to wait and see what is the explanation here. Because it is intriguing. Look, FTR, they've been on the back burner for months. Months. What has FTR been doing, right? Not a whole lot of anything significant. So now they're actually taking time to develop some kind of a story around them, which is good. And we'll see where it goes. Well, is this the beginning of a slow FTR heel turn? Cash Wheeler was not on the same page with his partner. It doesn't mean that it's not going to end up that way. Here's how I look at this. This, I think, could be the setup, the slow burn to an eventual match that they're building to. FTR against Copeland and Christian. Now, how you get Copeland and Christian after what we've seen in the last 2 weeks back on the same page, that I don't know. There's going to be some heavy lifting there after what we've seen. That's the second time now that Christian or his crew has cost Copeland the world championship. He's not going to be very forgiving. We may get another Copeland-Christian match before we get the two of them back on the same page. But that's what this felt like. This is the beginning of the build to possibly Texas, Copeland and Christian reunited against FTR. Because you know Copeland wants that match. FTR, they're his boys, right? They're all best friends. They all want to work together. When Copeland came back to AEW, one of the things he said he wanted to do was team with Christian again at some point. It all makes too much sense. Texas, it's a big show. You're going to need some attractions on that show. He's not going to be challenging for the world championship. Cope and Christian against FTR. The build to that match began in earnest tonight here on this show. But now we can move beyond this and go to Moxley and Swerve at the pay-per-view. So Bandido, he was interviewed by Renee in the back. Bandido said that he will never forgive Chris Jericho for making his mother cry. Bandido challenged Jericho to show up on Sunday's Collision. Yes, Sunday's Collision. It's the Slam Dunk Sunday Collision. They're being moved around again. So he's going to challenge him to show up on Collision to give back his brother's mask. This is all stemming from the angle they did at Revolution on the pre-show with Gravity. Gravity is his younger brother. Gravity was going to wrestle Chris Jericho. I don't think that would have been a very good match at all. Thankfully, we were spared. And they did an angle that honestly was a good heat-getting angle, where he beat the man up in front of his family. His brother comes running out, Bandido, to try to save him. He got beaten down. The mom is all upset. The sister is there, right? It's a good angle. It's a good angle to get heat. So he is wanting his brother's mask back. This is all leading to another championship match at some point between Bandido and Jericho. Are they doing Super Card of Honor in a few weeks? Probably, right? I haven't paid attention to what the date is on that, but how does this not end with Bandido being the one to take that title from Jericho? Bandido is awesome. Bandido is going to have to take that Ring of Honor World Championship from Jericho. The only fear that I have, it's like a catch-22, because he has the Ring of Honor World title still, and it's like, all right, there are other people who are probably better suited to be in that spot, but if he loses the title, That probably means we get more Jericho on Dynamite. And I don't want that. So I'm torn. I don't know. Maybe they could find a way to keep the title on him for another year or two or four. But anyway, after Bandido throws that challenge out there because he can't forgive Jericho for doing what he did to his family, who comes strutting in? Johnny TV. Comes strutting in and he says, who cares? Bandido is not ratings. Wrestling Johnny on Slam Dunk Sunday, that would do more ratings than the Super Bowl. And Bandido accepts. It's too bad that AEW doesn't have drug testing. Because if they would have drug tested this man after making this comment, he would be on suspension right now. So we had Will Ospreay against AR Fox. We almost never see AR Fox on Dynamite. In fact, the last time we saw him on Dynamite was in January. He had back-to-back matches 2 weeks in a row against Ricochet and Swerve Strickland, and he lost them both. And when you see AR Fox on this show, you can bet your ass that he's there to lose. So he's a great wrestler, and they had a good little match here, but it's basically, this was like a warm-up match for Will Ospreay. Again, you see AR Fox, it's like, you know exactly what we're doing here. He's a body in the ring to put somebody else. So I don't care how good he is. That's his role. There's no drama to it. There's no real excitement to it. And they stuck the commercial break right in the middle of this, so we didn't even get to see all that much of this match. Coming out of a break, Ospreay hit a standing Spanish fly for a near fall. The hook kick caught Fox, who then ducked a hidden blade. He had a short cutter and a haluva kick. Ospreay managed to get a cheeky Nando's kick. Took too long, though, on the follow-up. Allowed him to answer with the low main pain. But then he missed a 450. Ospreay clobbered him with the hidden blade, and he picked up the win. When the match was over, he checked on Fox, pointed at him, a little show of respect. And then Ospreay, he's leaning on the ropes, and they shot this in a way where right behind him are two banners, one for Dynasty on April 6th, and then one for All In Texas on July 12th. And he looks up at the All In Texas banner. Of course, last week he made it very clear that he wants to win the Owen, and he wants the main event in Texas to challenge for the AEW World Championship. So that's his objective now. That's his goal. The match itself was fine. It was just filler for Ospreay right now. Until we get to the Owen, which they keep talking about the Owen in like the very next segment. Again, more on the Owen. They still haven't told us when the Owen Hart tournament is even beginning. Now, normally where All In takes place is in August. This year it's in July. It would be the month before. So I assume that the Owen is going to kick off late May, early June. Even if it was in May, we're still 2 months away, if not 3 months away. We still have time until they tell us otherwise, because maybe they're going to bump it up. But until they tell us otherwise, we have a couple of months. What is Ospreay going to do in the meantime? Is he going to go out there every week and wrestle people like AR Fox? Is this what we're going to do here? I'm waiting to see what the direction for him, other than just, I want to be world champion. That's great. But again, you're talking about a tournament that still may be a ways off. So I'm not quite sure if they are going to have some plan for him in the interim or not. Until they tell us when the tournament is actually kicking off. Speaking of which, they put a graphic up making it official that the AEW World Championship match at Dynasty will be Swerve Strickland challenging Jon Moxley. And Renee tells us that it is official for the pay-per-view. She welcomes in her guest, Hangman Adam Page. I have to say, he cut his hair short. I don't know why. I guess he just wanted to. And I look at him in this segment here as he's standing there, and his haircut now, it's as bad as when Shawn Michaels cut his hair, not knowing they were going to call him back for the Elimination Chamber in 2002. So he cut his hair like really short, and he showed up, I think it was the Elimination Chamber, and it's like, it just doesn't work. It just doesn't. Although I'll take that Shawn Michaels and that haircut over Saudi Arabia in 2018 with no hair. I mean, I'll take that, but it doesn't work. Like, you know, the cowboy, he's got to have the longer hair. I don't know. He looks like, who's he remind me of? He looks like a Little Orphan Annie. Anyway, so he's being interviewed by Renee. She asks, what are your thoughts on Swerve getting a world title match against Jon Moxley? And he said, he would never let Swerve win the AEW World title. Remember when he said that? He said that before. I will never allow him to again become the AEW World Champion. That's a promise that I made. And I am nothing if not a man of my word. But after what I've gone through with MJF, I realized that my focus needs to be on myself and not other people. What has he been through, by the way, with MJF? He beat him. He won. I mean, he makes it sound like he went to Revolution and he lost and he was embarrassed. And you won, dude. Like, you could calm down a little bit. I know MJF is still talking shit, but, like, you beat him. You won. But he's got to focus on himself now. So, like Ospreay did last week, he officially entered himself into the field for the Owen Hart Cup, said that he will become the next AEW World Champion. So that now makes Will Ospreay, Hangman Page. MJF has said he wants to get his Triple B back, although he hasn't entered the Owen yet. Jay White last week said that he wants to go after the championship. We still have Darby out there. We don't know when Darby's going to be back, if he's going to be back, if the plan might still be to wait until Darby gets back and put the belt on him. So there's a lot of different options now, a lot of names floating around the world title scene in AEW. The one thing about this Owen stuff, in the past, they have given us Owen Hart tournament brackets that are really lacking in star power. And I think a lot of it just has to do with Tony Khan just doesn't want to beat certain people. So, you know, he doesn't want to just fill the tournament with all of his top names and then they have to get beaten. So we end up with names in there, you know, like middle of the card names. And it's like, this is not the best of the best here. Already, though, we have Hangman in the tournament. We have Will Ospreay in the tournament. It's possible Jay White will end up in the tournament. It's possible MJF. Why wouldn't MJF declare? Hangman did. He has to now. It doesn't make sense for him not to want to be in that tournament. So it looks like they're trying to load the tournament up. We only got a few names so far, but I'm hoping that this might be the most loaded field they've done. Like, don't be afraid. Don't hold back. You know, I mean, they'll put fucking Jeff Jarrett in the tournament again. I mean, you did that last year. You don't need to do it again this year. But I could definitely see them doing that. That could be how we get the MJF-Jeff Jarrett match. They may circle back around to it. We may get that in the opening round or something. But put your top guys in there, man. This is for a main event championship match in Texas at All In, your biggest event of the year. They should all want to be in there. And it's okay if they are and some of them get beat and they don't win, because from that, splintering off from that can be stories that take them into whatever their match is going to be at All In. Hopefully they will load this field up in a way that they haven't done before. Now they close the show with the second women's match of the night. Megan Bain with Penelope Ford in her corner against Chris Statlander. And we had the women's world champion, Timeless Toni Storm, joining on commentary for this match. Bain sent Statlander to the floor early. Statlander, though, battled back with a moonsault off the apron and a shotgun drop kick back inside. Toni said that the thighs on these women are made for crushing watermelons. As Penelope Ford was running distraction on the apron, Statlander got hit with a back suplex from the apron into the ring. That took us into the final break. After the break, Bane caught Statlander with a running Liger Bomb out of the corner, and then she tried for the F5. Statlander, though, landed on her feet, took her out. Both women were down. So now they're sitting, and from a seated position, they begin to smack the shit out of each other. We've got a slap contest going on here. And they work their way back up to their feet, and they're still going at it here. Statlander, after this, got tripped up by Penelope Ford. Aubrey Edwards sees this, and she ejects Ford to a big pop. Toni Storm said, "So long, sugar tits." Bain went for a pump kick. Statlander, though, caught her and picked her up for a powerbomb and then hit a Michinoku driver for two. Bain came back with a released German suplex. Statlander popped right back up and no-sold it. And she delivered a German of her own. And you know what? If you do that spot, it's like, all right, that's fine. But they kept going. So now Bain takes the suplex. She no-sells it. She hits another one. Statlander pops up. She no-sells it. And at this point, I just wrote here, like, why even bother? This reminded me of the match. I want to say it was Cassidy and Penta, where they kept hitting each other with Canadian destroyers and popping right back up and hitting another one and popping right back up and just no-selling them. Like, destroyers. And just no-sell. And I remember I threw my hands up in the air. I'm like, I don't know what this is. I remember watching that match and specifically thinking, like, I don't know what this is not wrestling. I don't know what this is. But whatever this is, this sucks. This wasn't quite as bad as that, but I was starting to, like, get vibes and, like, I was thinking back to that. Because they're hitting these German suplexes and, like, one or two is fine, but, like, three, four, five, and they're just popping right back up like they don't mean anything. I have to laugh to keep from crying. With some of the shit that I see on these shows week to week, I have to laugh to keep myself from crying. So Statlander rolls out to the floor. Bane launches herself with a suicide dive, wipes her out. She puts Statlander back in the ring and hits a Falcon Arrow for a two count only. Statlander comes back with a cannonball off the apron to the floor, takes Bane down. Bane, though, grabs Statlander, and she throws her into Toni Storm, who is sitting right there at the announce desk. And Toni now falls to the floor. Bane then gets a hold of Statlander and delivers an F5 on the floor. She throws Chris back into the ring. She delivers a second F5. And then Bane pinned her to remain undefeated thus far in her run here in AEW. Toni Storm now stands up on top of the announce desk. And she begins to tape her fist. And she climbs down. And she gets in the ring. And we got a hockey fight that broke out between these two women. And Bane is going after her. She's going after Bane. Security descends upon the ring to get in between these two women. We get the pull-apart brawl, which again is another staple of all wrestling show. Every week we have pull-apart brawls. As pull-apart brawls go, this one was good in that, I mean, everybody in the crowd was going nuts for this. And so the fans are chanting, let them fight. Toni breaks free, clotheslines her out of the ring, and she lands on her feet like the fucking Undertaker. Megan Bain lands on her feet, and now she's pacing back and forth outside. Crowd is chanting for Toni Storm. She takes the microphone, because she came off like a huge star here. And Toni takes the microphone, and she says, my God, you're a big bitch. I've always said the bigger they are, the harder they come. So it's about time that you and I got tantric. You keep looking at my title, but you don't have much to say, so I'm going to make this easy for you. You and I shall have a date at Dynasty. I will make your thighs shake and your body quake, and I will leave with this strap on. And she's holding her title, and she says, I will leave with this strap on. For I am timeless Toni Storm, and I'm going to rip your tits off. Can I just say, because that's not the first time she's ended with that line. What a great catchphrase. I can't believe no other woman has ever thought to use it. Like, you're trying to intimidate your opponent. You're cutting a promo on her, and you just go, I'm going to rip your tits off. Like, that's a badass line. So that's how she ended her promo, and that's how they went off the air. That's two really good women's matches on this show, and they close with their women's world champion. And both the champion and the challenger getting a big reaction to their pull-apart. Toni Storm got, again, a superstar reaction here from this crowd here at the end. We have not heard Megan Bain yet, interestingly enough. She's not cut a single promo. We have not heard really the sound of her voice. And I think that's okay because she's silent but deadly. She goes out there, she's mowing people down. I mean, last week she mowed down Toni Storm. Later in the show, she mowed down Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale. On Collision, she attacked Thunder Rosa. This woman has been a menace so far. Nobody's been able to take her down. And it worked for China for a while. China didn't speak. She just stood there and looked intimidating and beat up the women, beat up the men. But eventually, she started speaking and she started cutting promos, and Megan will too. The only thing that surprises me is they haven't even had Penelope Ford. do any of the talking for her, unless I missed something on Collision. I don't think she's really been doing any talking for Megan either. But eventually we'll have to hear her cut a promo and we'll see how that goes. But for now, you know, they have strapped the rocket to Megan Bain and she is getting the next shot, clearly, at the Women's Championship. It still feels early for her to be getting this shot. I don't know that they're going to have her win. I don't think so. So it feels early for them to be doing this. She may not be undefeated for that much longer. But I think they've done a commendable job of getting her ready for that spot as far as portraying her as this unstoppable force. And she's laying people out. She's racking up wins. She's undefeated. She looks like a star. They've done everything right with her so far. Is this the right move, though, to transition her into a title match this soon? If she wins, yes. If she loses, maybe not. Because I'd like to see her go undefeated for a little while longer. Dynasty's, what, 2 weeks away? 2.5 weeks away? Still feels a little too soon for this, but it was a great angle to close the show. Again, I enjoyed the show much more than last week. Had a really good four-way to open the show. That was a great way to open. Two really good women's matches and a world championship match that, if nothing else, at least ended Adam Copeland's quest for now for the world championship. And they set up some kind of a story coming out of it with him and Dax, you know, with him and FTR, who, again, have not been featured in anything significant now for a while. And I do think the end goal here is to get to Copeland and Christian against FTR. What we saw tonight, I think, was the beginning of that. A definite improvement over last week. Last week's show was not good. This one, though, I thought was. I enjoyed this. Look at this. Funky Weapon is here. He says, Cope sucks. This match sucked. He's getting right to the point. Cope sucks, he says. This match sucked. There we go. There you guys are. Now let's go back to the early messages that came in that you will not see on your screen here. Brother Fluff Salisbury, starting us off with a five, says, this has absolutely nothing to do with Dynamite. But he says, what would you think of having John Cena attack R-Truth or showing up in NXT and attacking Ricky Starks? John Cena does not need to show up in NXT. I've only been saying that he should attack R-Truth for at least 2 or 3 weeks now, so I don't know how you missed that, but yes, I agree, he should. Deathronic 78, everybody's saying the Hurt Syndicate is going to help Swerve. I'm going out of the box and saying that Hangman and Keith Lee may not make sense, but it's AEW. Yeah, it really doesn't make sense. I've heard nothing about Keith Lee other than apparently he was backstage at one of the recent shows. I don't know if that means he's on his way back soon. I've heard nothing about him, so I wish him well. I don't know if he's coming back soon or not, but I don't think that's the plan. Jeremy Dyer, I think John Morrison was high when he said that. I know he was. He was definitely on something. Oz and Glory is a really fun episode of Dynamite, even though the Death Riders are awful. I enjoyed Mox and Cope going at it again. Billy and Mercedes tore it up. Now we got three really good matches on the show tonight. The two women's matches in the four-way. And our first real sign that we are, in fact, building towards Mercedes and Athena, which I think is great. And it's great to have a real direction now for Mercedes. You know, they could take their time building to it, but before it was just a collection of matches. She had the thing with Harley Cameron, but I mean, no real, like, good stories for her. This thing with Athena could be something special if they build it up right. KD. I mentioned KD earlier. Came in with a 50 bomb right before I went live. Maybe I'm being overly picky, but I'm not liking Toni Storm using her bisexuality as a gimmick to promote challengers. It smacks of insincerity because now she's saying all these provocative things when she didn't before, just to get an audience pop. First of all, I had no idea that she was bisexual. I mean, is that something that she's talked about? I don't know what her sexuality is. I don't really give a shit. So I don't know. I don't know if that's even true. I mean, if that's how you feel, I can't tell you how to feel, but I don't look at it that way. It's to me, it's part of the gimmick. The gimmick is very over the top. She, you know, when she does commentary, as she did tonight, she tries to be very humorous. I look at it as just part of the timeless Toni Storm thing. I don't think it's something where, well, she wasn't using it before. Why is she using it now? Because a lot of what she's doing with timeless Toni Storm and the gimmick, it's tongue-in-cheek and it's humorous. And she thinks it's funny. So it doesn't bother... I mean, it might bother you. It doesn't bother me. Because I look at it a different way. But is she? I had no idea if that's the case. It's the first I'm hearing of this. David, yes, Toni Storm is with Juice Robinson, but I don't know. Maybe she plays for both teams. She did state it? Okay. It's possible that she said it in an interview a long time ago, and I must have missed that. Dark Effect with the 23. Just wanted to thank you for reading my super chat on Monday night with all of the hatred and vim and vigor I intended. I'll say it again. John Cena sucks. I also want to say, can we please see the death of the Death Riders soon? From your lips to the ears of the wrestling gods, I hope it happens. Because I'm over it. Ryan from Southside Queens says June of 2021, she came out as bi. Okay, well, there's your answer. Today's episode is sponsored by Factor. If you want to eat healthier but don't know where to begin, or you think it's going to be too hard, I've got the solution for you, and it's one word, Factor. Factor is the meal delivery service that you've been waiting for. They have chef-made gourmet meals that make eating well easy. They're dietitian approved and ready to heat and eat in just 2 minutes. So you can fuel up and feel great no matter what life throws at you. It arrives fresh and fully prepared, which makes it a great choice for you no matter what your lifestyle. You can lose up to 8 pounds in 8 weeks with Factor Keto meals. Based on a randomized controlled clinical trial with Factor Keto, results will vary depending on diet and exercise. With 40 options across 8 dietary preferences on the menu each week, it's easy to pick meals that are tailored to your goals. Choose from preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, or Keto. Factor can help you feel your best all day long with smoothies, breakfasts, grab-and-go snacks, and more add-ons. Reach your goals this year with ingredients that you can trust and convenience that simply can't be beat. This week, I had their honey mustard chicken with roasted rosemary potatoes and garlic green beans. That's what was on the menu for dinner for me on Thursday, and it was delicious and easy too. I just popped it into the microwave, and in minutes, dinner was served. And that's great for me because, especially in the evenings, as you know, that's when I'm getting ready to go to work before all the shows. And there are lots of wrestling shows on TV every week. So that was Thursday. Tonight, I'm going to be trying their vegan mushroom marsala for the first time with roasted garlic green beans. All this garlic, at least I'll be safe from vampires. But I'm looking forward to trying that next. And I also have, sitting in my fridge, a bottle of Factor's cold-pressed juice. They have a whole bunch of cold-pressed juices, different varieties. This one that I have is their pineapple turmeric basil, is what it's called. That's one of their add-ons. If you go onto their website, they offer a juice variety pack with 4 different flavors. There's lots of other add-ons as well. Eat smart with Factor. Get started at factormeals.com/factorpodcast and use code FACTORPODCAST to get 50% off your first box plus free shipping. That's code FACTORPODCAST at factormeals.com/factorpodcast to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Joseph says, do you remember when Shawn Michaels used to do the Heartbreak Hotel on Raw and Superstar? Of course I did. I love that. I love the Heartbreak Hotel sign, the little couch, little heart-shaped couch. Diesel used to stand there off to the side. David Thiering with the 30. Last week, I sent through a Mentos the Freshmaker super chat, and it didn't do much to elevate the mood after a terrible Dynamite. Understandably so. Let's do take 2, shall we? Congrats on 85,000 subscribers, brother. Thank you, David. We are on our way. Yeah, I mean, again, a much better show tonight. I enjoyed the show much more than I did last week. So I didn't need that much cheering up tonight, thankfully. Oh, that's what it is. I'm a lot, yeah, Triple H said, I'm a lot of buy things, but lingual's not one of them. And then there was like this 5-second pause. Like, did I just say that? He goes, yeah, I think you did, pal. Liam, listen to every stream. First time joining live. Billy totally paced Mercedes tonight and deserves all the credit in the world for it. Well, I think Mercedes had a little something to do with that. They work well together. I mean, they had a really good match. I don't like that move that she does because it looks very dangerous. And I mean, she's still very young and inexperienced. And I don't know, maybe somebody else with a little more experience. I would hold my breath when I see that. But boy, that could have ended really badly. Dark Effect, what is Tony's fascination with Orange Cassidy? The guy has a better record than anybody in AEW. I've never gotten him. I also don't care how many matches or belts Mercedes has won. I just cannot invest in her gimmick or her stories. Well, I mean, hopefully the Athena story will be her Rembrandt so far. The Rembrandt of her AEW run. Her Mona Lisa. Duff's Vids, why did the donut go to the dentist to get a filling? Very good. Thank you, Duff's Vids. Oz and Glorious, stoked for Mercedes to win the Ring of Honor belt. Oh, it could happen. It could definitely happen. By the way, you know, I mentioned Takeshita earlier tonight, and we made the announcement earlier this evening that Konosuke Takeshita, the Alpha, coming to House of Glory for the first time, making his debut here in New York April 25th. I'm very upset about this. I will not be here for it. But he will be here. You should get your tickets now. Alex, thank you for the 25. Dan Richards, if Athena / Ember beat Asuka in NXT, which I think was the plan before Ember's injury, would she have been a bigger star today? I mean, that's just so impossible to say. I think that if Vince McMahon saw her as a star worth investing in, then he would have invested in her. I don't know. I mean, I'm going to say no for that reason. But it's an impossible question to answer. David Thiering, Fire Panda and I were talking in the chat, and Fire Panda came up with a good idea. How about a live Mentos tasting? And we send your video endorsement to Mentos, new sponsor of the Sound Off, perhaps. Just a thought. No, I'll just take the Super Chat video I did. They'll see what a great actor I am. I mean, if I can't wow them with that video, then I don't think we're going to be able to get the job done. Oz and Glorious, Wheeler Yuta, the Horace Hogan of AEW. Awful. Duff's Vids, dogs can't operate MRI machines, but cats can. Oh, my goodness. Jeez. Jeez Louise. That's the name. How has there never been a women's wrestler named Jeez Louise? It's the perfect name. Got all these shitty names they're always trademarking for NXT. Gotta get Jeez Louise on there. Dark Effect. Moxley is the epitome of garbage deathmatch wrestler. Blood spots like that on television are a good way to piss regular fans off. I'm all for blood in a match, but it has to make sense. Just get the belt off of him and move on. That's all he knows. This is why he left WWE. This is the kind of shit he wanted to do. This is what makes him happy. This is what gets him off. It's the shock value of it. KD with the 20. Do they do a turnaround this WrestleMania and Steve Austin shows up and stuns Cody and Cena beats Cody? I can see that and would love it. Yeah, but what purpose would that serve? I don't see the point in it. Austin shows up and stuns Cody, but why? He's not going to be there after that. So, in potentially his last appearance, he's going to show up and stun their top babyface. I would like to think that even Austin would go, this is shitty creative. I'm not doing this. I don't see the purpose. I don't see the benefit. If he's going to show up, let him stun The Rock. Or Cena. But honestly, let him stun The Rock. Or not even factor into the main event if that's the case. And just let him make an appearance elsewhere on the show. Let him stun Austin Theory again. Everybody else makes Austin Theory look like a fucking loser, so why not? Bender McSimpson, it's Tony's fault that Mercedes has not had any good storylines so far, but never doubt the ability of the CEO. Tuxedo T-Servo, thank you for the 12. No message, just showing some love. Thank you, brother. Nick Grosso with the 1999. Ah. I see that we have hit our goal. Yes, 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 love it. Yes, yes, yes. All right. We're getting a double round, man. We're getting a double dose tonight of Be the Booker. That's still to come. Nick Grosso says, I have an NXT question after last night. The new group now being called Dark State and did not attack Trick Williams, and somehow Javon Evans knew they were going to attack. So is either Trick or Javon the mastermind behind this group? I heard there was a bit of a chaotic finish to the show. I have not seen NXT yet. I am going to watch it. I have not seen it yet, so I cannot comment on that. But I do think that because the group is comprised of PC guys, that there should be some sort of mastermind behind it. Probably makes sense to do that. And Javon Evans is not going to be the mastermind of anything. So if anybody's going to be the mastermind, I can better buy into Trick Williams in that spot, not Javon Evans. I don't see that. Or somebody else entirely. Arabian Knight, instead of aligning with the Hurt Syndicate, maybe MJF brings in his boys Hammerstone and Richard Holiday, the Dynasty. Or do you think Hammerstone is NXT bound? If he is, I've heard and read nothing about that. I've heard nothing about Hammerstone and NXT. MJF and the Dynasty, that's an MLW thing for those who don't know. Used to be his boys back in the MLW days. Well, we have a pay-per-view coming up called Dynasty, so if something was going to go down, I mean, that would kind of make sense for it to happen on that show. It's possible. If, let's put it this way, if they are coming in, then I would put them with MJF. Absolutely. Honey Deep Fried in the chat says, Ricky Saints is the mastermind of Dark State. You know what? Sure, why not? It's not going to be Javon Evans, though. I can't buy into that. That would be ridiculous. And he has to take the mantle as like the leader of yeah, I don't buy that. Justin G, 24 months of channel membership, JR Voice. Gold Skull. Gold Skull. Gold Skull. Thanks for everything, Solomonster, and the chat, even to Sidro. Congrats on the Gold Skull, my friend. You've earned it. How did The Undertaker get his urn? He earned it. Alex says, does Brie Mode give you the goosebumps, brother? Like The Rock? Do I smack myself when Brie Mode comes in? If I smacked myself, it would be across the face, not on the arm. Also, can you see a major stipulation for the Cena and Cody match? Can you see them overbook it again, similar to last year? Not unless it's bloodline rules, no. If it's a regular match, you can really only overbook it so much, but if he's The Rock's champion, then The Rock can show up and tell the referee, don't ring the bell or I'm going to fire you, right? I mean, it's very easy to get around that. So do I think they'll be overbooking? Probably. I think so. Chris Manson. Congrats on 85,000. Truly one of my favorite podcasters. One of. You and Kiki Palmer are the soundtrack to my work life. Do you think Billy will turn on Athena so that Mercedes can be her mentor? That would be interesting. I'd be down for that. Although Tony Khan, for the first time, actually uttered the name Camille in an interview that he did on YouTube. He was asked about Camille, and he said, well, you know, the last time we saw Camille, she was attacked, and we don't know who attacked her, and so the next time we see her, like, he was talking about her as if she's going to be coming back soon. I don't know if I buy that, but the fact that he actually mentioned her name and kind of answered the question, there might be a sliver of hope that they may not be completely done with her yet. David Thiering, let's celebrate a bonus round of Be the Booker. Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Honey Deep Fried says, try Diet Coke and Mentos together. Yeah, I'm not going to do that. I know exactly what happens when you mix those two. I don't know why, though. I don't know the science behind it. I don't know why it explodes. But you're not getting me with that. Chris Manson, also, I don't see the problem with violent spots when we also have good matches in between them, like tonight. Because some people don't like the violent spots for the sake of violent spots. It's not that hard to understand. Retro KOH, what do you call a cute door? Adorable. What about American bees? USB. Now, see, I have a better joke. What country is next to USA? USB. See, mine was better than yours. Arabian Night, vet like Cardona should be the mastermind of Darkstay. I think Cardona would be a good fit as a heel for NXT. I said that last night on TNT. So I agree with that. I think he could help bring something to the table, I think, in a group like that. And as a heel, I think that he could definitely contribute something there, for sure. Well, thank you for getting me to the goal. We actually hit both of our goals. We have 434 likes at the moment. And so we're getting a double dose, a double round here of Be the Booker, which is the second time this week that we're getting that. We're on a roll here. Got to keep it going. They're going to be in Bologna, Italy on Friday for SmackDown. So remember, we're going to be going live a little bit earlier than usual on Friday. Maybe, what are we going to do? What are we going to do on Friday? Probably 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. I'll let you guys know. We're definitely not waiting until 11:30 at night. I can tell you that. I got my trusty VPN. I'm all ready, man. I'm all ready for Friday. So just be aware of the earlier start time on that. Let's be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the Booker.
BlissFan says, I hope Alexa is on SmackDown. BlissFan, it's feeling like Alexa may not even be at WrestleMania this year. I saw she just got pulled from her WWE World appearances, her signing appearances. I don't know what's going on with her. They haven't really taken any steps at all to progress a story for her for WrestleMania. We're 4 weeks out. All right, let's book a tag team match and see what the wheel presents to us. And we begin with Strikeforce. Tito Santana and Rick Martel, the former tag team champions. They were a good team. Strike Force against Breezango. Not how I wanted to start. Good thing we have two rounds, though. Women's match. We have Bird Girl spreading her wings, the Intercontinental Champion, Lyra Valkyria. And she will defend that Intercontinental title against the former Women's World Champion, one Rhea Ripley. Now we're talking. Now we're talking. All right, let's split the baby. We are 1-1 right now. Main event time. And ladies and gentlemen, if anybody is listening to me up above, if the wrestling gods are looking down upon us tonight, they will answer our prayers, and this will be the scene coming out of Dynasty on April the 6th. Swerve Strickland holding the AEW World Championship. Let us hope. Swerve defending against Nick Aldis, the current general manager of SmackDown. We have not seen him wrestle a match in a few years, but I do believe that Swerve Strickland and Nick Aldis would actually be a good match. Some people may watch WWE and not even know that Nick Aldis is a wrestler, but he is, and I think the two of them would have a good match. All right, so we go 2 out of 3 here in round number 1 of Be the Booker. Of course, we have another round, which we are going to bust out the stipulations. Hey, we had a street fight on Dynamite tonight. Maybe we'll land on a street fight. Well, we saw some nasty extreme shit on the show tonight. And we're going to get more of it here because we have a Texas death match. Now, that doesn't really make a lot of sense for a tag match. So I say we... Oh, man. I guess, you know what? We'll start with the women's match. It's going to be a Texas death match with the ladies. And Lita, who, by the way, also celebrating her 25-year anniversary this year with WWE, but they're only acknowledging Trish Stratus. They're acknowledging Trish Stratus' 25-year anniversary, but technically it is also the 25-year anniversary for this woman right here. Lita in a Texas death match against Julia. Not just any Julia, Stardom Julia. Julia is going to murder this woman in a Texas death match. My money is on Julia. All right, stipulation number 2. This will be for the tag team match. First blood. Boy, we're getting awfully bloody tonight, aren't we? We had blood in the Moxley and Copeland match. We had blood in a Texas death match that we just booked. Now we're booking a first blood match. First blood tag team match. The Rockers, Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty, team number 1. I want to see the Rockers in there with a team that is just completely the opposite of them. Just like totally different from their style. Well, I would say this is different enough. What do you think? How about a Texas death match with Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty against Sting and the Great Muta? How's that for a match? Would you tune in to see that match? Because I would. Man, there's a match we've never booked before. What a combo that is. All right, main event. I feel like that could be the main event, honestly. We should have ended on that note. All right, we got a main event. We got a main event to book, and this main event is going to be a steel cage match, which I am almost positive was our main event on Monday night. This will be the 4th cage match You count the two from last week, and then we booked one on Monday, and now we're getting another. You're talking about killing a stipulation dead. Holy shit. No more cage matches. Mr. Bob Backlund entering the cage. Good old Bowtie Bob. Devil's choice. Keep or replace the man that you just picked. I think we're going to replace him. I think we're going to replace Bob. I mean, all due respect to Mr. Backlund, I think we're going to pick somebody else. So let's start over again here. Oh, look who it is. It is one half of our WrestleMania main event this year. It is the man. It is the American Nightmare. The WWE Champion. Cody Rhodes. I think we've upgraded here. Cody Rhodes against Mark Briscoe inside a steel cage. We got ourselves a clean sweep, everybody. We did it. I didn't know if we were going to pull it off, but we did it. Cody Rhodes and Mark Briscoe. You put those two in a cage? I dig that. I'm pretty sure that match has never happened before. I know Cody was on his tour of the Indies years ago, but I don't think Cody and Mark Briscoe is a match that's ever happened. So we got the Sonic jingle. When you hear the Sonic jingle, you know it's a good night. Now let's catch up with your messages here. Get those final questions on in. Let's see here. We have Honey Deep Fried Chicken. Pick your poison. Watch another Death Riders match or eat Sour Patch candy. Pass the Sour Patches. I used to eat Sour Straws. It's fine with me. I used to have the cherry or strawberry Sour Straws. Arabian Night. Mentioned Vet like Cardona would be the mastermind. Okay, we read that one already. And I am in agreement with you. Dark Effect says, what is a pirate's favorite letter? Everyone knows pirates like the sea. Oh my God. Congrats for 85,000. Let's get you that play button. Wow, the play button's a little out of reach right now. We're working our way up slowly. Alex says, is there a specific reason that Bigelow is not in the Hall of Fame? Same reason that Sid and other people aren't in the Hall of Fame. They just haven't gotten to them yet. I don't think there's any specific reason that he has been held out, though. No. Honey Deep Fried Chicken says, Swerve Strickland versus Moxley will end with Ricochet screwing Swerve over. And Solomonster's head will turn red. Now, why would you even put that out there? Why would you even put that out there? Duff's Vids, what do you call a train that carries bubblegum? A choo-choo train. Thanks for the reviews, Solo, and putting up with the jokes, you the man. I'm nearing my breaking point. Thank you, Duffs. EJ Slemp, why has no one challenged John Cena? John Cena Moxley to a first blood match yet. They would win the AEW world title in 5 seconds. That would be smart. A lot of stupid people there, I guess. And Blue Jay says, got my girl into pro wrestling. She has trauma now. Well, if this was her first show, why would you allow this to be her first show? Why would you want that match to be the first thing that she sees as a wrestling fan? I could have told you that was going to be a mistake. Brian Mack, if you had the power to go back in time to prevent the Montreal screwjob, would you do it? Yes. I would. And then let the chips fall where they may. I still think Austin goes on to become a big star. I don't think things end up in the end, I don't think they end up being radically different as far as the war and all like the really big things that followed eventually. So I know people like to say, well, you know, without the Montreal screw job, we don't get Mr. McMahon. I'm not so sure about that. McMahon ate his first stunner from Steve Austin in September of 97. So they had already established the potential for this anti-authority story with Austin and McMahon even before Vince did what he did to Bret Hart. That just kind of threw, you know, gasoline on the fire. I still feel like for the key stuff, we would have ended up in the same place. But the biggest reason I would, if I had the ability to go back in time and try to stop it from happening, with the assumption that maybe something could even be worked out and Bret would stick around, is the possibility that maybe that could have helped prevent what happened with Owen in 99. And I think, honestly, for that reason alone, if I thought that that one little change could change that, I'd do it in a heartbeat. Oz says no screw job equals no Goldberg kick, possibly. Very likely. Yeah, that too. Do Mankind and The Rock still become WWF champion? I mean, if Bret sticks around, yeah. I don't think Bret would have... certainly not in the way that other top stars may have, would have stood in the way of, you know, getting new stars over. He would have wanted to work with them. And I think it would have benefited them for him to work with them. I've always said, like, if Montreal doesn't happen and Bret sticks around like he was supposed to, I don't know what happens with Shawn because he's still got Shawn Michaels. What do you do with him? But I think Bret puts Austin over WrestleMania 14, which he had never done before. I mean, Bret pretty much won all of their matches. I mean, I think Austin won one by DQ or something, but I think 14 would have been the time for Bret to drop the belt to Austin. He would have put Austin over. He would have anointed him. And I don't think Bret would have had an issue working with and in the end putting other people over as well. Other, you know, The Rock. He was close with The Rock. Yeah. No, I think that he... Now, the Attitude Era, would he have been a good fit? He would have felt a little out of place more than Shawn. Shawn would have, I mean, Shawn fit in there like a glove. But I would have loved to have seen him be able to mix it up with some of those guys and mix it up with Kurt Angle later on and Jericho. I mean, we just missed that on so much. What if Shawn Michaels never hurt his back? Well, then he wouldn't have missed 4 years, but for all we know, he would have been dead. He was that fucked up. Him getting hurt may have been the best thing that ever happened to him, but it's not as if he got hurt and then he turned his life around. You know, he still hadn't hit rock bottom yet. So if he doesn't get hurt, he's still on the road. He's still doing stuff and taking stuff. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where things end up with him. Blue Jay says she's seen Dark Side of the Ring episodes. LOL. I'm joking though. She never knew the business. And then she wanted to watch all of Heels. She's intrigued now. She'd probably enjoy LFG, that new LFG show. I really haven't checked out too much of it yet, but I kind of feel like she would enjoy that. Or you could show her old episodes of Total Divas. I hear John Cena was a great heel on that show. Honey, Deep Fried Chicken, did you see a picture of Vince McMahon at Madison Square Garden on St. Patrick's Day during the Knicks and the Heat game? Yes, I did. He has his skunk hairdo now. At least he let his hair go natural. I actually think he was a little puffy, but that's the best I've seen him probably in years. He didn't have the complete wax face like he usually does. He didn't have the shitty little evil villain mustache. I'm not going to sit here and say I wish him well. I don't wish him anything, but that's probably the best I've seen him in years. I do believe the Knicks won that night, if I'm not mistaken. Poor Tracy Morgan, though. I mean, that was embarrassing. Maybe what happened is Tracy looked over and saw Vince McMahon in that green suit, and then projectile vomited all over the place. See, now it makes sense. He looked over and saw Vince, and that's why he reacted that way. He said it was food poison. There was a meme going around online. It's so bad. There's a meme going around online of the picture of him throwing up on the court, and then spliced in next to it like is the picture of Vince from Beyond the Mat saying, he's gonna puke. And I'm like, who thinks of these things? Like, it's too perfect. But like, who thinks of these things? Oh, man. I feel bad for the people around Tracy. Wasn't Steve Sciarippa there? I think as they were wheeling Tracy out, I could have sworn Steve Sciarippa was like standing right there. An Arabian Night. Larger fumble, Triple H, for Triple H. Oh, I see. Larger fumble, Triple H with the Wyatt Six or Tony Khan with Camille? Well, I'm going to go Triple H and the Wyatt Six because we're talking about like five people instead of one. And they invested far more in the Wyatt Six in their presentation than Tony Khan ever did with Camille. So I'm going to go larger fumble, Triple H. The internet has a longer undefeated streak than The Undertaker. You got that right. The internet is undefeated. Well, I had fun. Thanks for hanging out with me. Thank you for getting me to 85,000 the other day. Onward we go. And on Friday night again, I'm going to be live at least a couple of hours earlier. I'm not sure yet exactly. Probably 9. I think that's what I did last Friday. So I'll keep you guys posted, but definitely going live a little bit earlier. Not immediately after SmackDown airs, wherever it's airing, but definitely live a few hours earlier than usual. Hopefully you guys will join me for that show. It's going to be a big show because Roman Reigns is back and CM Punk is on the show. And Seth Rollins has claimed he will also be there. Although who cares about that, right? Everybody's waiting for Roman and Punk to be in the ring at the same time. So that's what we're going to be getting on Friday night, and we'll talk about that. Lightning Wolf, thank you for the five. I got to ask, what are your thoughts on Chavo Guerrero making his return to TNA this Thursday night? I was not even aware that Chavo Guerrero was making his return to TNA. This is literally the first I'm hearing of it. And I don't really have an opinion one way or the other. That's my honest opinion. But you just broke the news to me. And Base Beerus says, Kane Dewey. Don't let Foley hear you. He might cut a promo on you. Be well. Stay safe. Happy March Madness, everyone, according to Honey Deep Fried Chicken. Yes, if you are into March Madness. It's March Madness here on the channel. Got all these international shows. I'll see you guys on Friday night.